Using AI in Partner Marketing with today's special guest, Bridget Murphy.
Today's episode is brought to you by ThriveCart. Need a shopping cart but don't want to pay monthly fees? ThriveCart is the perfect place to start your journey. When they first started, I didn't think they'd go the distance. Now I have an account. Yes, I've got egg on my face. See how easy ThriveCart makes it to sell digital products? ServeMaster.com/ThriveCart.
Are you tired of dealing with your boss? Do you feel underpaid and underappreciated? If you want to make it online, fire your boss, and start living your retirement dreams now, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Artificial Intelligence Podcast, where you will learn how to use artificial intelligence to open new revenue streams and make money while you sleep. Presented live from a tropical island in the South Pacific by best-selling author Jonathan Green. Now, here's your host.
Now, I'm really excited to have you here because people ask me a lot about is using AI to handle large data and kind of handle applications. Someone was asking about this recently, people who run large affiliate programs, you say, oh, how can we speed up our process? Because a lot of affiliate managers, their biggest time delay is going through all of the applications, separating the good from the bad, the real from the fake. And know that you're actually doing something very similar is very interesting. So how did you guys first decide to implement AI in your business and where did your journey begin?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our journey began with working with big entertainment companies in New York. That's really where my background started. A lot of sales and partnerships, essentially, with the Disney's of the world and Fox News of the world, where we would bring brands together. But the goal wasn't just to generate revenue for the entertainment company. The idea was is that we were really trying to support and grow the other businesses. And doing that through partnerships is really powerful, right? But in order to do that, you really need to figure out if the target demographics align and if the information that you're trying to share, content share, aligns in order for those partnerships to be really effective. So how we ended up starting to migrate from just traditional, what brands do you think resonate with your consumer questions? We would go out and do the research and find those brands that it seemed like a good fit, where we started using technology and data analytics in order to dive in to help us better hone to find those right partners for our clients.
So what can go wrong if it's a bad fit between the brand and the client?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. So what can go wrong is you don't generate any registered users. You wouldn't receive the kind of sales lift that you were looking for. It really depends on which initiative we're trying to secure a partnership for. So we do partnerships for all different kinds of partners for all different kinds of reasons. Primarily at the end of the day, everyone's trying to drive sales, but it's sometimes around an event or a product launch or a particular organization's trying to age up or age down the target demographic. And when we bring in and analyze data, we can now filter through to order and use our software and our technologies in order to better find that right fit partner, which then can accomplish those. One of the biggest benefits of using AI really is being able to pivot midstream. So if we're doing any kind of digital partnership, we can track it. We understand whether or not it's performing to the consumer, and we can then manage that particular offer or even the marketing materials to better uplift that result.
About the big strategy. So rather than the actual implementation of the AI, what's the idea behind what the AI is doing? What kind of parts of the process has it taken over? And what does it look at just from a big picture perspective?
What does it take over? A lot of it is really just streamlining the initial process. So when we take on a new client, we do what we call our immersion process, where we dig deep into the target consumer. We look at the client's values. We look at what they're trying to accomplish. We establish the goals. And then we come back and we put it through a list of tools, if you will, to make sure that the brands that we're bringing together make sense for that partner, but more importantly, make sense for their partner's consumer. And so that's where it solves a lot of our problems and saves us a lot of time by being able to fast and quickly analyze that data to determine the right partner. So what we do is we actually generate a list of large partners. We filter through which partners are a good fit or which partners may not be the best ideal fit for a consumer. And then we also take that back to the consumer, our clients, because we want the clients to be able to tell us, this might not be the right brand fit. This might be a perfect brand fit. So it helps us really mold who those partners will be in the long run.
Okay, so it's helping you with the data analysis part of the process, which is you feed a whole bunch of data in, and the old way would be putting into spreadsheets or using multiple different tools to organize the data. And now it's one big brain that does the whole data analysis based on the algorithms you guys have used with past clients.
Yes. And we have to filter that through multiple different channels. So it's never just one stream of information, it's multiple. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Sometimes people think that AI can completely replace everyone, but it sounds like you guys have seen that you need to have both elements there because sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. And the example I always give is I always ask for 10 examples. So if I'm asking for a headline, I say, give me 10 headlines to choose from, which mathematically means I'm going to get a better result if I just say, give me one and I decide if I like it or I don't. And so just that process, it requires my intervention. And the same thing, if I'm writing a fiction novel, I say, give me 3 book ideas or 7 book ideas, and I'll choose the one I like the most. This always gives a better result. And it's one of the areas where AI really shines because it's good at doing fast data analysis or coming up with larger lists, but it's not always the best at the final decision because there's still that part where you use your experience and your instinct and go, even though this seems right on paper, there's something here that doesn't seem right to me. And that's where instinct comes in, or the human component.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting that you say that, because in the beginning, so much of it was based on instinct, and there still is that component of it, but you're right. It gives us a much larger, wider variety to start from. So the one advantage of using AI is that it also pulls content and partners that we may never have thought of, right? So it generates these lists that we may not have considered in a previous exploration, and it allows us to then take those in and run them through to find whether or not they might make sense. It's something that we would never have done originally.
Overall, how has it led to a change of like your team compositions? Has it replaced employees, or have you re-entrained and upskilled employees so now they're just able to handle more clients at once? Or how have things shifted as far as the team?
So with regards to that particular element, it hasn't changed the team. They have actually become more educated in how the process works. We also are very careful in who we select, because we still use some outside agencies for market research and for some other technologies. In terms of the team and from that aspect, it hasn't changed. They've just become a lot more knowledgeable and capable. In terms of how AI has changed our team in other ways, not necessarily replacing any team or folks, but it's definitely helped us in terms of an agency grow just by being able to increase some of our capabilities and services that we normally would take were very daunting, right? So think about all of our different CRMs and our different methods that we use in order to do research.
I think that's really good to hear, because a lot of people are afraid that they'll be replaced by an AI, but really, certainly me as a business owner and most people I talk to are like, well, I'd rather just have my team be twice as fast.
Exactly. Right? So especially if you're doing things with like content creation, if you're doing things with like streamlining your tasks, there's so many different applications that are out there that are really powerful and that can help the team do things that normally we can't do. We just started using a software that helps us do outreach on LinkedIn. And it's something that has been really important to our team to expand our capabilities and become more knowledgeable in this space. And now it allows us to do it without even thinking, right? So it's out there making contacts for us. It's helping us create content and roll that out. So there's a lot of things that just enhance the capabilities of the existing team.
I think that's really good for people to hear. A lot of people are thinking, oh, it's too late for me to learn things. They're so hard. But the promise of AI, and this is what I'm always trying to remind people, is that it will make life easier, not harder. If I say to someone, you have to learn Photoshop, that's years. To learn in Master Photoshop is so hard. To learn an AI tool, the learning curve is much shorter. At first, sometimes it seems harder because they often have really bad onboarding processes. Most AI tools seem to have all agreed to do that. But once you get through that initial hurdle, it's just one day of suffering, not 2 years. You don't have to go to college to learn it like you do video editing or a lot of the other more technical software. So I think that's really good for people to hear that you can bring it in, you can implement it, especially with some industries that are not as agile. And like a lot of people, I guess they've all seen Mad Men and they think, oh, advertising stayed the same for 50 years. And there are certainly people that don't like to change, but seeing that you can be agile and find opportunities and kind of bring it into the company is, I think, very exciting for a lot of our listeners to hear that opportunity is there. When you guys are thinking about bringing in different tools, what's your process for data security? Because you have several different moving parts. You have the data coming in from the research firms that are feeding you that data. And obviously that's proprietary. You don't want it getting lost. And the other element is you have who your client is, right? You certainly don't want your book to go out the door. So how do you maintain that security? And what kind of ideas have you guys thought about?
So that's a really good question, because we are talking about that with all of our clients, making sure that you can house and store content and data that no one else can touch. And that's something that we're constantly trying to evolve. The steps that we're typically taking are just being really strict with our employees in terms of the use that they have, not allowing sharing tools, and being really careful across the board. But that's something that we're constantly trying to figure out. I think that's a concern of everyone's right now is cybersecurity and making sure that you can't access that data once you have it. Because you're right, so much of the information that we have is proprietary from our clients and they need to know that it's protected.
I was recently talking to someone who they found out that an embassy was using Google Translate for top secret documents. And I was like, that's super not secure. Like, even at the place where you think they would have the best security, the embassy where they have all the training about don't pick up a USB stick, people are still using the most public of translation tools that stores all the data. And it is a question that people ask a lot. And I know it's in certain industries, it's really important, like medical with all the HIPAA laws, you can get in a lot of trouble like using ChatGPT. So that's when proprietary tech becomes important. So it's interesting to hear the perspective from even marketing agencies are still thinking about this, because the last thing you want is for a competitor to get access to all of your data because you don't realize they're an investor in the AI tool you're using or something like that. So when you talk to your clients, what is the experience like when sometimes are they all switched on, or do you have a lot of clients who have no idea about security, they don't know what you're talking about, and it's a lot more, that's become a bigger part of your process is handling that for them, saying, no, here's why it's important, because you don't want to pay us and then you lose all the data.
So that's one of the things that we're doing internally is just, it's so interesting that you're bringing this up, because I was at a business owner meeting the other day and we were all having a conversation around insurance. And the biggest increase in insurance right now is to protect your data, right? The idea that most small businesses are being targeted, not large businesses, like you hear the targets of the world being hacked and how monstrous those results are, but you're not hearing about the small businesses that are constantly being breached so that they could get their client data, right? And then the way they do is they hold it hostage and you have to. So now we're looking at all different means to not only protect ourselves, but also insure ourselves, because businesses can't survive it. So that's been really important. And we're translating that conversation over with our clients. What are our clients doing in order to protect data? How can we transfer data securely? How can we make sure that we're having these open lines of communication? But Jonathan, you just really hit the nail on the head. It depends on the client. Some clients don't even want to have the conversation or they're uncomfortable around it. Some clients are rigid and strict to the point where we're having difficulty keeping the program moving forward because we're having issues in order sharing and collecting that data. So it really depends on the clients, how that conversation takes place at the beginning.
Yeah, because when people ask me about a secure version of AI, they never like my answer, which is you load an AI onto an air-gapped computer, you finish using it, you hit it with an electromagnet, and then you destroy it, and then you burn it. So every time at the end of every day, you destroy the laptop. But nobody wants to do that. The highest level of security, nobody wants the car that's super secure because it would be a nightmare. It's always finding that spectrum of enough security. And I used to think as well, oh, I'm so small. Why would anyone attack one of my websites? Every one of my websites gets 50 to 100 attacks a day. The size doesn't matter. As soon as a website comes online, even if there's no data, it's just getting constantly hit because there's just so many bots out there. That's their entire living. And we sometimes forget, I think, because the way viruses appear have changed. A long time ago, like 20, 30 years ago, viruses were on everyone's computer. And now, exactly, they're being more targeted at companies because the strategy has moved from just hitting everyone by email to hitting specific places. And I still know people that they find a USB key, they go, I better find out what's on this and plug it into my computer, which always stops my heart. It's like that they've been doing that in movies for 20 years. Like, you got to know that one. So it's very interesting to think about how even smaller businesses do need to think about security, and these elements are changing in insurance. Are you finding that when you talk about AI, the insurance companies know what you're talking about when you're talking about these levels of security and what you're kind of protect as far as your data? Or are they still thinking, oh, you're worried about your computers catching on fire?
I think when you talk to insurance company about AI, some companies understand that it's not necessarily your computer, I don't know, getting some kind of opening up an email and it's spamming your entire corporation. It's more of that actual research and how you're sharing it, how you're researching it. It's just becoming more and more. I'm not sure anyone knows exactly. You might, but otherwise, I think it's becoming just a real challenge overall. I think from an insurance perspective, what you're trying to do is make sure that you're covered to the largest extent, right? You want to make sure that not only are you covered, but your clients are covered. And that's just something that's really important to us. But it's also one of those really tricky things where you got to make sure that it's accurate. And the information that you're putting inside of a contract for an insurance company is critical so that you are covered in case something does go sideways, right?
Just to pivot a little bit, when you're now looking at hiring employees, have you changed the types of questions you ask or what you look for as far as experience now that you guys are using more AI tools? Do you look for someone? Have you started asking, do you have AI experience and what's your knowledge of programming? Do you ask any questions about that now?
So we still require some, we like to call homework assignments, so that we can determine whether or not a person's really invested in that particular job assignment. And how they execute and how they obviously show up. And we're finding that it's becoming easier or more challenging to find homework assignments to give to prospective employees or prospective hires because they can answer the question with the ChatGPT. So we have to be very careful on how we phrase the questions so that there's a certain level of work. Now, we don't want someone doing a job, right? We don't want someone asking them to do too much in order to go through the interview process. But depending on the position, it really does help us to know if they are capable. What we're finding is the more younger and even some seasoned marketing folks have a really good understanding of it. But those conversations do come up in interviews where we ask how they use it, what they use, which platforms they're comfortable with, how they use it, and how they implement it, I think is a better way of stating it. Yeah. So now that you're asking that question, it's a really good question because we are finding that we're using it more frequently.
Yeah. I feel like every time there's a new technology, it goes through several phases. The first is, oh, it's really cool. You have that skill. And then eventually it becomes like it used to be email skills a plus. Then this is in the 90s when I started working. Then it became email skills encouraged, right? It went from a plus to encouraged. Then it became required. Then it became 3 to 5 years of Microsoft experience, or they wanted you to have a certification in Excel or something. And now it's not even on job listings. They just everyone assumes, because if someone showed up for an employee with you and they go to a job, they go, oh, I don't know how email works. I've never sent an email before. You'd be like, what? It'd be so shocking. So we've gotten to the point where we assume it. Where do you think we are as far as these new level of AI skills? Right now, are we still in the plus phase? And when do you think we'll get to that point where you go, we would never hire someone who doesn't know how to use ChatGPT? Like, how far away do you think that is?
And I'd be surprised now if people are already engaging in conversations around it. I have a lot of people in my life who are in teaching positions or some other, and they are using ChatGPT. They're familiar with it. So it's really interesting. I've never seen it pop up in terms of when it says list of capabilities and it has Word and Google. And I have yet to see AI. I'm not to now look for it because I'm curious if people are actually embedding that as one of their capabilities and one of their strengths. But I don't know where we are in terms of the total number of people that are very comfortable using it. I think we're probably right somewhere in the middle in terms of people who are familiar with the different AI platforms versus people who use them on a regular basis. Would you agree? I'm curious to your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that we're in that phase right now where it's a nice to have, and some companies are banning AI tools because people use them wrong, and some companies are making it mandatory. So we haven't really figured out what's going to happen. But I think within 3 to 5 years, my feeling is it will be the same thing as if someone says, I'm an accountant, but I don't do spreadsheets. You're like, what? I don't know what, I don't understand that. So I think it will become, I think within 3 to 5 years, it will go from it's nice to have to 3 to 5 years experience required. So even though it seems optional right now, it's not. And I deal with a lot of people who are later in their careers and they're like, can I coast to retirement without learning this? And I'm like, don't risk it. It's not worth it because you can get.
It's not hard, right? It's just practice.
The challenge is that a lot of people teach that it's hard. They teach these really complicated prompting formulas and make it feel overwhelming. And that's why I like to interview I don't like to interview founders and tech companies because that's the promise of AI is that it makes things easier, that it's easy to learn. And that's really important for me to constantly reiterate is that you're not a tech person. You're not an AI lady. You're just someone who is creative because you're in marketing as a creative type and you've implemented in your business. And that's really exciting to see that, oh, I don't have to become from a programming background. Because a lot of people describe using ChatGPT like programming Python. And I'm like, don't say that. That's like the worst way to describe it because I don't like snakes and I don't know any programming, not how I use it at all. So I think that's the really important lesson. And that's why I'm really excited to have you on. I think this has been really amazing for people to hear that you can implement it, use it effectively, improve your company, improve your numbers, have a lot of knowledge and come not from that type of background, but come from the creative, artistic background, that mindset of networking and connecting with people rather than connecting computers. So I think this has been really amazing. For people that want to connect with you, is the best place, your website is the best place, LinkedIn. How can they find out more about you, the people that are loving this episode?
Website is envisionpe.com. And my LinkedIn is Bridget Murphy. And you can find me at Bridget Murphy with envisionpe.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to link both those in the show notes and below the video on YouTube. Thank you so much for being here. This was a really good episode. I know people are going to love it.
Thanks so much. It was great meeting you. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Starting with AI can be scary. ChatGPT Profits is not only a bestseller, but also the missing instruction manual to make mastering ChatGPT a breeze. Bypass the hard stuff and get straight to success with ChatGPT Profits. As always, I would love for you to support the show by paying full price on Amazon, but you can get it absolutely free for a limited time at artificialintelligencepod.com/gift. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Artificial Intelligence Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss another episode. We'll be back next Monday with more tips and tactics on how to leverage AI to escape that rat race. Head over to artificialintelligencepod.com now to see past episodes, leave a review, and check out all of our socials.